Welcome to the Dauntless Grace Exchange. I'm Deidre.
And I'm Megan. And today we have on a special guest. And I know we say that every week, but this week I really mean it because our guest happens to be Jory Elizabeth Hall, my 15-year-old daughter, who I was supposed to write a bio for you, Jory. Let me try this. Jory was born in July of 2008. She is 15 years old, a sophomore in high school. She's an Enneagram 9. She enjoys painting and writing and reading and being creative in all kinds of facets and bugging her little sister. Did I get it right?
I mean, yeah, you hit most of the main points.
What would you add?
I like chocolate too. I like eating chocolate.
Are you a honey mustard person yet? Do you like coffee?
That's pretty much summing me up. What was that?
Are you a coffee person yet?
Nope. Just tried coffee the other day and it refueled the fact that I don't like coffee.
Yeah. I don't blame you. I was like 35 before I even tried to drink it. I just thought it smelled nasty. So I get it. I don't blame you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And favorite subjects in school?
Definitely literature. Although it's a really tough class this year. I like chemistry. I do pretty well in that. Just science in general, except life science, because I find that boring, just personally.
Chemistry, though. Dang, that's hard. Good for you. I stayed away from math and sciences.
I like electrons.
Legitimately, she got an entire bachelor's degree without a real math or a real science course.
Your mom did.
If I can avoid math.
I feel like chemistry has a lot of math in it, though, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. It does have a lot of math, and I don't like that part of it, but I do like
Yeah, no, this is how Jory's brain operates. She says, Mom, all my friends are doubling up on math this year. I don't think I want to do more than one math. So I think I'm going to double up on science instead and do chemistry.
No thanks.
Okay, Jory, but that is math, but all right.
So you have biology, chemistry, and still have math?
It's statistically less math in my brain. So, I mean, you know, as long as I can get out of doing another history class, I will do whatever it takes.
All right. Okay. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
So I guess we should say that we're having Jory be our guest on our podcast. First of all, is she the youngest guest we've ever had? I couldn't remember how old Lila was the first time she was on our podcast.
Well, I think she was already in high school or out of high school. So.
Okay. Ooh. So our youngest guest, and as the parent of the, yeah, we'll give you a plaque. Just wait for it. I'll commission my daughter to paint it for you.
Oh, I bet she's good.
But the reason that we asked you to come on is because we've been talking about social emotional learning. And as your mom, I happen to know for a fact that for a 15-year-old, you also care about social emotional learning and are quite highly emotionally intelligent for a 15-year-old girl, I would say. Not that I'm biased or anything.
That's high praise for yourself, Miss Woman who taught me all that I know.
You're welcome.
I think if you have an Enneagram 4 parent as a mother who has done any self-awareness work, you're going to have some social emotional learning, not to mention someone who was also a middle grades teacher for 10 years. So you had it coming, Jory.
I really did. Really did.
How would you define it? What is social emotional intelligence or just learning, or how would you define that?
I think it's like the ability to understand how you feel and how other people feel. And like, this sounds very smart. Knowing what to do with that, not just knowing what's going on, but how to react and how to act and how, like, not just to think about it, but also to act on it in a good way.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. I had heard the word when I was first parenting, like figuring out how to respond instead of react, because what you're saying is like, if I can sense I'm feeling something, but I just react out of that and I don't consider how that might exacerbate the situation or make the other person feel like that's not helpful. So to take a step back and kind of look at it and respond in a way that is emotionally intelligent. I like that definition. Good job.
It's a little lengthy, but we can cut it.
No, it actually fits really well with like the five pillars of SEL, which is we talked about on the podcast last week, which is about like awareness and managing your own emotions, awareness and working with others' emotions, and then responsible decision making. So like you said, what do you do with that information when you know yourself and you know other people? How can you do it in a way that is like proactively moving forward and not maybe putting up a wall in the relationship or just shoving aside your own emotions or, like Deidre said, reacting out of whatever that emotion is. So I think you summed it up really well.
Well, thank you. I've been not practicing.
I don't know
I
what I was going to
practice.
ask you. When do you feel like in your life, like at what age or what grade in school, did you start noticing your awareness to this, like being more attentive to it than maybe before when you were just younger and more immature?
The first thing I thought of was when I was around 12, because that's when all of the friend drama, boy drama, like all just kind of sparked in all of us at like the same time. And it was just kind of a skill that was nice to have because like some of my friends, I don't know, like didn't grow up in an emotionally intelligent like environment like I have. And that sounds like bragging, which kind of is. Thanks, Mom. But I mean, it was kind of nice just to deal with all of the petty middle school dramas in a way that I know I wouldn't regret later in life.
That's really good. Yeah. It prepped you to go into high school kind of feeling more ready to handle the challenges at that level then.
Yeah, because if I can handle like middle school drama, then I can somewhat handle whatever high school has to throw at me, hopefully. I mean, I'm still, only a sophomore, but hopefully.
You know, I mean, your middle school years too were marked by the pandemic in a way that, like, my middle school years did not have to deal with that kind of social isolation. Add on top of that, technology and the way that you guys, even while like socially isolated, were technologically connected in a different way. I think it just threw on like so many more layers to what relationships look like at an age that's already kind of fraught with emotion and. Who am I? And my brain has literally stopped developing to wait for the rest of my body to catch up with it for a couple of years. And so there was just so many layers to what you were trying to navigate all at the same time. And it helped that, you know, I was working from home. You were home a lot more during the pandemic. And I think it just really gave us a chance to talk more openly than maybe a lot of, you know, girls that age would talk with their moms. I think that helped just the circumstances of that, right? Just being home so much more together.
Because it's not just upbringing. Like I mentioned, it's not just the environment that you grow up in, but this whole like generation, like the 3 years that I'm surrounded with, like that kind of gray area. We were all inhibited because our growth years were isolated. Like 11, 12, 13, that's when you grow the most socially. And we were stuck behind a computer screen. So, like, we
Or
didn't
a
have
mask.
go off, or masks. So it's just like, it was definitely an inhibitor, both socially and academically, but mostly socially because school can help with academics. But like school isn't going to teach you how to be emotionally intelligent. There's no class for that. So it's
There
just
should be classes for that.
there should be. Yeah, you should teach one. Hint, hint. Wink, wink.
What does it look like now, though? So junior high was, lots of quarantine, lots of masking, lots of changes in your bodies and all of the emotional states that you are all in together. But now you're 2 years into high school or second year into high school. What is it like now? How are you navigating that, or how are your friends?
It's kind of like we're all mentally middle schoolers. I find that our class is usually the class that the teachers are like we're the troublemaking class. Just today, my teacher said that there is like a decreasing respect among not just our class, but like in students in general, of their teachers, which could also be because we didn't interact much with our teachers during those years. And yeah, I mean, Now it's trying to overcome that kind of inhibitor and trying to really learn like how to interact with people, because we're at the age where like it can be dangerous to not know how to interact with people, because it can really affect our futures now, like really affect it. And not just like junior high where like no one cares what you do, because no one cares. It doesn't affect your future, but now it does. Like it can affect what college you get into, or like your lifelong friends, and just it's yeah, it affects what you do now affects your adulthood, really.
That's really true.
Jor, talk to us about being a young female with all of the fun new hormones and emotions that happen around those fraught middle school years. And what did, like, I remember it pretty clearly, and that was 13 years, 30, not 13, 30 years ago for me. What did it feel like to all of a sudden feel like you weren't a really a little kid anymore, and then just have all of these emotions that you didn't know what to do with?
I mean, online outlets really was kind of all we had, because we couldn't interact in person very much, because we didn't want to get sick. So there was a lot of online outlets. Like, I didn't have social media, and I still don't. But I didn't. I just had like Teams where like me and my friends would talk, and like that's where I met most of my friends. Most of my relationships came from Teams over that course of like 2 years where we didn't really interact in real life because of social distancing. So, I mean, it was like weird, because now I don't know how to make friends in real life that like last a while without being like hidden behind a screen. I mean, that could just be like underlying social anxiety or something that most of us just haven't discovered yet. But yeah, I mean, it was a lot.
Well, I'm also curious how you have navigated then. You cultivate this group of friends through Microsoft Teams, which is just provided by the school, right? And then you all show up in school together, and you're going into high school now. And like, what was that like? What did it feel like to be in real life and responding and reacting in the moment to the way someone's looking at you weird, or the way they got upset and walked away, or how to now it's like real and here it is right in front of you.
Well, I've noticed this in my friend group. We tend to be very conflict aversive, which may not be a good thing, but it's just kind of a thing that we've done. And I mean, I don't know really how it harms our friend group. It probably has over the years affected how we interact with each other now, but we don't like conflict and we don't like dealing with it. But
And
interacting with
not to put words in your mouth, though, I will say that when you guys have conflict that comes up, how do you normally broach the subject? Are you doing it at lunchtime, or when are you doing it? Texting, right? It still goes back to
texting.
that's the easier way for you guys to have the harder conversations, isn't it?
Because that's how we learned to make friends. That's how we learned how to like interact with people, is through a screen. At
Wow.
least for me. It's just easier that way, because you don't have to deal with all the scary human emotions.
And not to connect a global pandemic to your Enneagram type, but you are also an Enneagram 9. And they, Enneagram 9s tend to be pretty conflict avoidant. That's like one of the biggest pillars of knowing if you're a 9. So part of that could be your lens at the way you look at it, but also I think the fact that your whole friend group can be kind of like that is probably because you haven't had to see people's reactions in the moment. So this way, if you're kind of on the other side of texting, you can consider how you want to respond because it's not all over your face for them to see, you know.
I mean, my friends aren't, they don't know their Enneagram numbers. They probably don't even know what it is, really. But I do see that. I do see the kind of conflict aversion that we all just kind of have, because the only real conflicts we've had is with boys. So that's really easy to just avoid, like push to the side. Don't even think about it because we don't want to, because we don't really interact with boys, because especially in real life, because they don't really like us. But that's their problem.
That's right. I like that confidence in you.
Okay, I want to come back to that, but since we were talking about you being an Enneagram 9, knowing that I have been obsessed with Enneagram since you were about 9 years old, and also when I do training telling people that they shouldn't type their children, explain a little bit about your Enneagram journey and how you came to find out that you were a 9 and all of that. Do you remember those earliest conversations we used to have about it?
Kind of. I remember when I was like probably 11, around that time, like 10 or 11, and you had me take the online test because that was back when you believed in the test. And you had me
No, it's
take
because it
it.
was a good starting point.
Well, you had me take it anyhow. Dad still wants me to take it. But anyway, so I took it. And I think I got like a 6 or something. And for a while, you thought I was a 6 because I was just kind of like a recluse, basically. And yeah, basically. But then
Well, and
I
some of
don't know
that
when,
anxious stuff, right? Like not wanting to go out in public, not wanting to talk to real people, kind of thing, which I think now is more of a symptom of being a pandemic generation in
Oh,
middle school.
I don't know when you changed your mind, but you changed
I
your mind.
didn't change my mind.
Well,
Do you remember
kind of.
the conversation we had in the kitchen about a year or two ago?
No. Remind me what that was.
All right, here's Jory's Enneagram journey. Let me just speak it for her.
Okay,
So
okay.
yeah, you were having me dissect something that was going on in your friend group, and you were saying, okay, so this is how I feel when this happens, and this is how I feel when she says this, and so I want to respond this way, but that's probably not good. So everything that you were saying, I said, hey, Jory, it kind of sounds like this is how you feel. And I started reading you some Enneagram 9 things, and you were like,
All
are you inside my head?
right.
I was like, oh, does this resonate? Does this resonate? Because literally, I know what to listen for, and every word that was coming out of your mouth sounded like those core fears, longings, desires of what an Enneagram 9 sounds like. So, over the last year, I've tried to just say, hey, what about this? What do you think about this? And everything that we've talked about, you're like, oh, yeah, that's me. Oh, yeah, that's me. And I think you finally embraced that for yourself now, right?
Yeah, I mean, it got easier the more that I became like just plain emotional, like really knowing like how I feel about different stuff and coming out of my shell and not like being glued onto the internet, like living life instead of just like computer screens like in the pandemic. And I mean, yeah, I mean, I embrace it. Whenever you make a comment about me being a 9, I'm like, yeah, that sounds about right. Every time you read your Instagram posts, I'm like, yeah, sounds about right.
Well, I'm proud of you for how much you've stepped outside your comfort zone. I mean, this year you're engaged in National Honor Society
Hopefully.
hopefully in speech and debate club, right? Is that a
Yeah,
new
speech and acting, I think it's
speech and
technically
acting?
called.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been doing that a little bit.
That those
Lit
are big ways
magazine,
to
new
step.
newspaper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there's supposed to be a newspaper. That would be fun. A lot of writing.
Awesome.
And the literary magazine. I'm thinking about publishing in there as well as literally making it, but also publishing some of my pieces in there, which I never would have dreamed of doing like a few years ago. Because last year I was like, I just brushed it off. I was like, well, who would read it anyway? Like, why does it matter? I had nothing that I thought was of value to publish in a magazine. Like, that just seems so crazy to me. But now I'm the one making the magazine. So I'm kind
Oh.
of obligated to publish. And also because my English teacher won't let me not publish.
Love that.
And also because you found in this area of academics, of writing and speaking and acting and all of that, that that is a little bit of where your secure space comes in. That's what we would
Oh,
call
yeah.
your three line, right? So
Yeah.
that's where it feels a little bit better to be in the spotlight of some stuff because you recognize your significance where you are good at those things and you can shine in those places.
Yeah, I never really thought of myself as like a good writer until like last year, I think. We had a creative writing unit and I was like, I actually kind of like this. Like I put time into it. That's when I started putting time into my essays and I was like, I actually kind of like this. And this year I joined a creative writing elective and I was like, wow, I actually like writing and I like what I write, which is weird because I never really liked the results, but now I do. So that's pretty cool.
Very cool. Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna hit on something here for you that you're not, I won't push you too hard on this. My AirPods keep popping out of my ears. This is fun. Okay, you recently went through a year-long relationship and breakup, and I know you don't want to talk about it too much, and I'm not gonna put you on the spot, but that also I think was a big learning experience for you, and I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about just how you grew and what you learned from that.
Well, number one, I learned what my favorite color was around that time. Because I just like, because he asked me what my favorite color was. And I was like, oh, green, just kind of casually. But like, my room's green now. So, like, I'm green. So, I learned what my favorite color was. A little deeper than that, I also learned, like, how I like to hang out with people. Like, I found out that I like hanging out at parks. And I like parks. Yeah, walking in parks. That's literally all we did together. And also, like, I don't know. I'm trying to think now what else I learned. I guess how to avoid avoiding conflict, like actually facing it head on, because you can't just like, unlike a friend where like we talked all the time. So like you can't just forget about the conflict, pretend it never happened, and eventually it'll go away. So I actually had to be like, dude, like we have to solve this. Like we can't just like forget this happened and not do anything about it. So yeah, that was pretty tough. I got a lot of help from you with that. You helped me solve a lot of my conflicts because I never really had experience with that because my friend group, we didn't really like solving big conflicts or even little ones because we just brushed them off like they weren't important. So I definitely did learn like practicing how to solve conflicts between people because that's super important.
Yeah.
Like you can't just ignore it.
I think you also probably learned some stuff about who you are, how you want to be treated, and who you are when you're the last one standing. Like, you know what I mean? You were probably like, even if I'm here alone at the end of this, I'm okay because I know what I want and I know what I how I should be treated, and I know my value.
Yeah, because that was basically the end of the relationship was I didn't think he was treating me right, so I did something about it and boom, hammer. So
And I think that just translates to all your relationships then, you know, whether it's with me and your dad or your sister or your friends, you can go, wait, I do have value to know how I want to be treated. And I don't have to avoid the hard conversations because I know that in the whatever happens at the end of this, I'm still going to be standing. I'm going to be okay.
that was a tough lesson to learn, and it is taking a while, but it's really valuable to know later in life.
I'm proud
I
of you.
would
That's
not have known that.
a big thing. A lot of people stay in relationships way too long because they just don't want to be alone. And for you to say, I'm better alone, knowing that I've stood for what I for who I am and how I want to be treated, that's really big. That's cool.
It's pretty tough to acknowledge that because, like, you've known this person for almost, like a year now. Like, they're a part of your life, but now you have to, like, you have to move on because it's just not working anymore. That's really hard, like chopping off a leg or something and just hoping it grows back.
Well, being an Enneagram 9 and already at 15 years old learning how to not avoid conflict is huge. It's going to have big payoff in your life because you have decided you can step into your own story enough to care and to, you can get out of the boat. What is it? Rock the boat a little bit and still be okay. Like you can still be steady,
Rock the boat a little bit. I like that. Yeah. The boat did get rocked, and I'm still here.
Somebody
And I'm
else will be
thriving.
flying out of it, but you're still in the
My hair might be a little messed up, but I'm here.
Okay, hardest question. I'm putting you on the spot.
Okay.
Where in your life do you find it is the most difficult to respond instead of react, or to muster up that emotional intelligence to deal with the situation in front of you?
The most difficult? Oh, I don't want to call anyone out. I can't be super specific.
Oh, then you're not going to say what I was thinking you were going to say.
What did you think I was going to say?
With your sister.
Oh, well, yeah, that's kind of a given. But I was going to say the constant flow of guys with one person in particular. I'm not going to say anything, but that can get pretty irritating. And that's all I'm going to say. Yeah. Oof, that's a little
So
tough.
watching your friends make choices you wouldn't think are the best,
Yeah.
you mean?
Yeah. And it's like, I wouldn't do that, and you probably shouldn't do that, but you do you, I guess. Just please don't take it
Says
out
an
on me.
Enneagram 9.
You do you. Just
Just
don't tell
please
me
don't
what
take it
to
out on me.
do. All
right, so we'll do another counseling session, not on a podcast, where we talk about how you might be able to like better respond than to your little sister instead of just reacting out of emotional intelligence.
Yeah, that'll take some work.
There's a whole lot of things that we could do when it comes to siblings, and I don't want to be on that hot spot either, hot seat either.
Yeah,
Word.
I mean, it's tougher because you really have known them your whole life, and it's like they can find your dirty underwear in the hallway. There is no respect. There's no like,
Why is your dirty
I
underwear in the hallway?
I don't know. But the
It's
first
a
time
metaphor, Megan.
it's a metaphor. I'm a literary person. But the first thing I thought of is like in Spanish, there's a whole different like way to say you for someone you respect, usted, instead of just tú. You don't have that. It's tú all the way home. There's never some respect. Unlike your parents, because you're supposed to respect them because they're old.
Wait.
Older. Older. But like you're the
Those are
same age as your
spring
parents.
chickens.
Yeah. And
Okay.
like you kind of respect your peers because you don't know them like that close. That close. So I mean it's very unique. You can't treat your friend the same way you would treat your sister because that wouldn't really work out. It'd just be kind of weird.
All right, well, we'll tackle that one another time. I guess not on the ministry's dime, but all
Hey.
right, two things before we leave, unless Deidre's got another question for you. What
Okay.
piece of advice would you give to other teenage girls about emotional intelligence? And what piece of advice would you give other parents of teenage girls raising them through this?
Okay, you got me there. Advice. I mean, it sounds cliche, but like, really think before you do anything, say anything. I know everyone says that, but really do, because when you think, it's like, wow, the brain can do so much. Yeah, I guess just think, maybe ask someone, like a mom or a dad, aunt, whatever. Just ask someone about it, seek their counsel, because that can be really beneficial. Just having a third person, a different perspective. It's like I probably wouldn't have many of the relationships I have today if it weren't for mi madre and her counsel.
Literally having to read every text message and help you craft them. And every time I would be like, okay, say this back. And you're like, well, I wouldn't say it like
I
that.
would be a little more feisty than
No cap.
that. Ew.
I
Please
knew you were going to get an
don't.
ooh with that.
Please don't. Was
You
that like
can
a
know what it
bet?
means, but you may not use it. These are the rules. I'm out
Did
of
you guys
pocket.
like bet before this how much mom would try to make me cringe? Was
No, but
there like
I
a
wouldn't have
purpose?
taken that bet.
You you just wanted to sneak it in somewhere?
All right, Jory. Now, last one though, for anyone raising teenagers, especially girls, what piece of advice would you give them?
Well, that's hard because I'm not a parent. And oh.
Yeah, but what is it that you either appreciate having or wish you had more of?
I guess think about the emotional aspect of it because if you just go in with straight logic, like you're gonna upset her and she's gonna be like, bro, that's not helpful. So like think about how like the subject, that sounds bad, but the subject is like feeling because emotions are important too, not just like logic, because feelings determine like everything. And if you just go in with like, well, this is point A and this is point B, so this is what you should do. And it's like, no, maybe not. Like, there can be a different option if you think about the emotional aspect of it and not just what you should do or what you think she should do. Because, I mean, there's so many different things. And not every conflict, like, has a clear solution. You just have to, like, listen to what the person is actually saying and how they feel.
It sounds a little bit like if it, from what you're saying, if a parent could give permission for all the emotions to surface, then it could help the teenager be able to think more clearly. Because it's like they can process their emotions out loud. Now they can make a decision about what the best course of action is. So it kind of gets our emotions and thinking in a little bit better order that way.
Like, don't just suppress the emotions and be like, well, stop crying about it. Like, no, you should
Right.
cry about it. You can, and it's really beneficial. And then you can think clearly and know if you should do something, what you should do, and how you can help or
And
do
not
anything.
every emotional processing has to even have an action after it. Sometimes we just need to process how we feel, and it doesn't require any step or action, or what was the causing thing that brought the emotion on. But it's really hard to know that before we process it. So I think that's really good advice. Probably just good advice for us to do
Yay.
with everyone in our lives. And I will
Yeah.
say, Megan, you're not my mom, even though, well, wait, I'm older than you, but you're a good
Very
friend
much
in that.
older.
You're a good friend in that way, because when I need to process emotional stuff, you give me space to do it. And then we can decide, like, okay, well, now I know what to do based on that, but what I, or maybe I don't need to do anything. So find yourself a friend who can do it for you if you are an adult and you didn't have a parent who allowed that space for you. Find yourself a counselor if you don't have a friend. Find yourself a mentor that can do that for you. We got to have places to process those emotions and to think more thoroughly so that we can respond instead of react. I think that is a great lesson for us as adults and kids to learn, so we can all just be more socially emotionally intelligent.
You guys are welcome that I am very illogical but supremely emotional. I know that's been a very big asset for both of you, so you're welcome.
Just being a four?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's go. I'm learning already. Awesome.
Thanks for just sharing all this, Joy. I know it's hard to talk about some of this when you're still so young, but we appreciate it. And hopefully people can learn a little bit from you and your wisdom, especially if they're parenting or teaching kids this age, or they are mentors in any way to young women. We just think that could be a real asset. So thanks for sharing so vulnerably.
And I get a plaque.
You do. It's going to be hand lettered by Jory Beth.
Let's go. She sounds like such an amazing artist. Man, I'm so excited.
I'll wrap it up
Thanks,
for you.
Jor. Yeah.
And that wraps up another episode of the Dauntless Grace Exchange. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app and leave a review so other people can find us.
You can follow us on social media to stay connected. We're on Instagram at Dauntless Grace Ministries, and our Facebook page is Dauntless Grace.
For more about the Enneagram, visit our website at dauntlessgrace.org for coaching and training opportunities. And you can follow me at Enneagram Megan on Instagram.
And be sure to check out our website for more information about today's podcast. Plus, you can click the resources tab to find books by all the authors we've spoken to or about. And you can find it at dauntlessgrace.org.